Rupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Vaskatya Desatarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpa Taruvyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaivyascha Patitanam Pavanevambhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, one may ask, you know, why is this topic, or why could it be an important topic for the future of ISKCON? Anybody in the audience have any idea or thoughts on that?
Otherwise we'll get the results of the title.
Yeah, she says otherwise we'll get the results of the title. Can the devotees who are in the doorway move forward so as not to block the doorway, which is, you know, blocking doorways, I don't know how people don't get this, is like bad vashtu. You know, it's blocks, so, and also kind of doesn't make people who arrive feel very welcomed. So, yeah, I don't want the light on so much. I know, but it knocks that down. So can it just have it, like, maybe have one less light? Can we do that?
Yeah.
That's better. Okay, thank you. That's okay. Okay, so it's going to be black. But I would say, I have no objection to the color black.
It's easy to read anyway.
So one reason is to maintain and preserve the integrity of the movement, keeping it as close as possible to the core of Srila Prabhupada's carefully handed down teachings as much as possible. One of the very first lessons we were taught within like a few moments, like a few days, was the preservation of parampara and the importance of parampara. And he gave such a very wonderful example, simple example, but effective, about harvesting mangoes. Now this was in 1967, January, and we'd never really seen a mango tree before. They weren't, at that time, part of the American culture. But he explained how the mango fruits are harvested by, you know, one person goes up in the tree, then another, another, and then there's somebody down below, and then there's another person, and a box filled with straw. So the top person, the first person up there, he'll pluck a mango. He passes it on to the next person carefully, and then the next person carefully, and on down until the person gets it who places it carefully in the box, all the time making sure the mango is very carefully protected. So in the same way, we want to maintain and keep Srila Prabhupada's teachings intact. And, that's what I mean about me handling this. So, I can't remember which button I'm supposed to put. Let's see.
You'd be able to just press the down key.
Yeah. One might think. Anyway, conversely, before I move on, what could be the result if we don't maintain the standards. You know, if so, keeping the standards strong will maintain purity. And if we don't do that, you know, what could be a result? So one of the obvious results would be that newcomers will be introduced to something else. They'll come, but they're not going to become acquainted with what we were given by Srila Prabhupada. Another thing that was actually experienced already, particularly in New Vrindavan, during an era where devotees were practicing interfaith, meaning that bringing people in from other cultural and religious backgrounds, and trying to accommodate them, and the result was they became influenced and infected by them, and those people never got introduced to a pure Krishna consciousness. So that's another possibility. Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter, very succinct letter, 1972, to Sudama, who was an early disciple, and at one point was sannyas, and he was really responsible for opening up Japan, not as a sannyas, actually as a grihastha. So he wrote this, but previous to that, they were having this experimental preaching. Nowadays we call bridge preaching, and sometimes we forget to cross the bridge, you know. So he wrote, "So far as the road show and this yoga village is concerned, these things should be stopped. Simply perform our kirtan. If we divert our attention in this way, the whole thing will gradually deteriorate. All these things are nonsense inventions. Such inventing spirit will ruin the movement. People may come, they're attracted by some show. They may stay for a while, but they won't remain because they've been attracted by some other thing and not the pure standard of spiritual life according to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Our standard is to have kirtan and start temples. What is this road show? What is this yoga village? It will be another hippie edition. Gradually, the Krishna consciousness idea will evaporate. Another change every day. Stop all this. Simply have kirtan, nothing else. Don't manufacture ideas." So he wrote this in 72, and you can see already there was a need to be concerned for the future. So I'm going to just speak really briefly. There's at this point, less than an hour. And what I have done is just taken three topics as headers, and then there will be some examples going with the header. So the header is minimization of Srila Prabhupada. I'd also like to mention that before I started this project, which was actually a presentation at the recent ILS program in Mayapur, International Leadership Sangha. So Gopal Bhatta asked me to do this topic. He didn't give a name, that was left up to me, but he wanted me to speak about the movement away from core values in ISKCON. So I wrote to a group of devotees, there's over 800 Prabhupada disciples on a Facebook, it's a closed Facebook conference, and I just asked my God brothers and God sisters, can you tell me what you're seeing, what you're feeling, what your observations are about, you know, from Prabhupada's departure, where there's been a drift or moving away. And I got quite a good response. As it is, I didn't use the top three because in and of themselves, it would have been inadequate time to actually go into the in-depth into these topics, but I'll tell you what the top three were. The first one was the book changes. These are the concerns which the devotees reported. So that got the most hits. Second one was mistreatment of women and children. And the third one was mistreatment of devotees in general. So these are topics of concern, and I hope some, you know, as things move on, we'll be able to address them, but that won't be part of tonight's presentation. So in this minimization of Srila Prabhupada, there is a few things, quite a few things. Srila Prabhupada is the head of the institution ISKCON, and he'll continue to be so as long as the institution is existing. And we're honoring him daily in Guru Puja. The daily Guru Puja is really, it's a time for each person to personally connect and reaffirm one's allegiance and relationship with Srila Prabhupada. It's a time to begin your relationship with Srila Prabhupada. You know, it's between you and Srila Prabhupada. A time to show your tangible gratitude just by being present. And it allows everyone the opportunity to offer personal service to him by offering the flower petals, clapping your hands, bowing down. All of these are, you know, part of the offering. However, sometimes during Guru Puja, I've noticed, and others have noticed, because after seeing this presentation, they came up and told me or sent me messages, you know. So the devotees notice that, you know, sometimes during the Guru Puja, side discussions are going on, you know. They're offering the aarti to Srila Prabhupada. But over in the corner, or sometimes not in the corner, just right out in front, there's another conversation going on. In other words, some indifference. And it's especially disheartening for devotees when they see that type of behavior coming from leaders, whether they're, you know, the temple commander, the temple president, their GBC, you know. Leaders are expected to be there. And I've had a personal experience with Srila Prabhupada just following the installation of Radha Gokula Nanda at the manor. Guru Puja was going on, and suddenly Prabhupada just stopped it. It's like, where is so-and-so? Where is so-and-so? He named two names, which I won't name the names, but where are they? So devotees scrambled to get them. And I could understand from this, because they were leaders, they weren't just itinerant devotees, that we were expected to be there, and this was an important part of our lives. Somewhere it's recorded that the daily Guru Puja was actually instituted by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur as a means for his Grihastha disciples who might not ordinarily be at the mat to remember and honor him. But then in ISKCON, it's a staple of our morning program. Further evidence of the minimization of Srila Prabhupada is not mentioning his name, not mentioning ISKCON's name in promotional material or signage. You know, you'll see a sign, something is going on, and you don't see ISKCON mentioned, you don't see Srila Prabhupada mentioned. Quite often, you don't even see Krishna's name mentioned. And I could give examples, like I have examples, but time and also just hopefully you'll catch, you know, I don't want to embarrass any particular temple or leader, so, but I'm making the point. Also, not displaying Srila Prabhupada's books, not even displaying Bhagavad Gita as it is, during programs held outside the temple, although the books by an ISKCON member may be displayed and may be prominent, but Prabhupada's are not there. And then, you know, I mean, personally, I feel like this is, aside from the fact that Srila Prabhupada was very particular about his books being displayed during programs, it's also irresponsible preaching, because it's hiding one of the greatest assets and allowing people to become further misled. when we don't mention Prabhupada or Krishna or Bhagavad Gita as it is. They'll hear Bhagavad Gita, the speakers will speak about it, and then the audience members, being new people, will, oh, that's book, that must be important. So they'll go to a bookstore and, you know, there you have so many editions. So without having Prabhupada's edition available or without specifying Bhagavad Gita as it is, these people who have heard from an ISKCON member about Bhagavad Gita can now become fully bewildered by having a Mayavadi edition of Bhagavad Gita. Another minimization is using ISKCON devotees and assets without acknowledging Srila Prabhupada or ISKCON. Again, some kind of outside program. So I also notice that relationship building with Srila Prabhupada is not being given priority. The new people come and Prabhupada's just that statue over there on that chair. You know, they're not really always given a great deal of opportunity to become personally acquainted with Srila Prabhupada. And then lowering the bar on standards instituted by Srila Prabhupada, often in the name of so-called worldly vision practicality. Like, it's not so practical. So one of the other obvious ones is more elaborate guru pujas than Srila Prabhupada's guru pujas are displayed. And it should be the other way around, that Srila Prabhupada's guru puja should be the most elaborate. His guru puja feast must be the most elaborate. That will help people keep an identity and a perspective, but it's often, unfortunately, the other way around. Then there's what I call the not my guru syndrome. I'll give an example. You know, it was like on Srila Prabhupada's appearance day and disappearance day, there's a fast. And one day there was a disappearance day festival, and one devotee came into the kitchen and said, where's prasadam? I'm hungry. Where's prasadam? Prabhu, it's Prabhupada's, you know, it's his disappearance day, we're fasting today. And this devotee said, well, he's not my guru. I mean, that's pretty painful. And it also shows the shallowness of the understanding of who is Srila Prabhupada in the life of an ISKCON member. Other persons, it was sometimes to lump Srila Prabhupada in with other gurus. I had an experience in Boston Rathiatra, a well-known ISKCON Kirtanyar, second gen person, came up on the stage. He was, you know, part of the program. So when he first started, he goes, so I want to begin by honoring my gurus. Well, that's an appropriate thing to do. And he starts off with a list of people who I've never heard of. And then he mentioned his mother and father, which was wonderful because they're Prabhupada disciples. And then some other names. And then he mentions Bhaktivedanta Swami, and like no pause, no intro, just Bhaktivedanta Swami and on to the next name. You know, so that was, again, I felt it was a little painful. Another symptom is I call the pick and choose. You pick and choose instructions. This one's intended as a little humorous. Getting initiated, and the guru says, okay, so no gambling, no intoxicating, no meat eating, no illicit sex. And then he goes, and absolutely no Facebook. And the disciples, what? You know, can't. Anyway. Another symptom is the slack sadhana. You know, rising early, basic staple program, rising early, attending Mangala Arati somewhere. Maybe you may not be near a temple, but in your home, online, at a friend's house, Mangala Arati, you know. 16 rounds minimum. For many, that's even a challenge. But Srila Prabhupada wrote in purport 927, Bhagavad Gita as it is, thus it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. So strict sadhana prepares us for this eventuality that we, you know, that we don't forget Krishna. But the sadhana standards have become, you know, weakened. Another sign of that is minimizing prasadam standards to the point where ISKCON members, initiated members, they're using onion and garlic, oh, no big deal. Everybody does it, no big deal. You know, coffee, tea, we take a vow, no, you know, no meat, fish, or eggs. No intoxication, which includes no coffee, no tea, but hey, no big deal. And now there's like the big challenge, the veganism challenge, kind of like the, I call it the Arjuna moment for ISKCON. It's like, you know, Arjuna didn't want to fight. Had a big conversation with Krishna about that. Krishna had to enlighten him. I mean, he gave good reasons. Didn't want to kill his relatives. He didn't want to live on blood land, you know. Sounded like good reasons, especially to people from the 60s where, you know, give peace a chance. And but then Krishna corrected his mentality. As Krishna's devotee, he was meant to satisfy Krishna and to please Krishna. And Krishna was asking him to fight. So when he accepted Krishna's instruction, he pleased Krishna so much because Krishna's mission was to annihilate the miscreants and give pleasure to the devotees. And Arjuna helped him do that, you know. So Krishna likes milk. Somehow we have to get it. And, you know, if we can have it through our own cows, that's really wonderful. It's the best. But Prabhupada said that even the so-called vegetarians, and I'm not talking veganism here, it's just like a general instruction, vegetarian or not, even the so-called vegetarians who do not take Krishna prasad are as much sinful as the non-vegetarians. Our propaganda is different. Maybe scoot up a little bit because there's people kind of in the doorway and they can't get in. Our propaganda is different. To make people Krishna conscious, can we get the people here scooting up a little bit, the ones who are blocking the doorway? So our propaganda is different to make people Krishna conscious, which automatically makes them sympathetic against any kind of animal slaughter. And that was in a 68 letter to Rai Ram. He actually told us that we're not vegetarians, we're Krishnatarians. He further said, if Krishna ate meat, we would also eat meat. So, you know, the main point is offering to Krishna, pleasing Krishna. And this Bhagavatam, somewhere in the, one of the pundits can tell me where it's in the eighth chapter, but cow, you know, ghee is absolutely essential for yajna. Now, if people for offering coconut oil, you know, and offering non-dairy items to the deities in place. But Krishna says, you know, something else. So anyway, another thing, this is just with regards to the concept. As adults, we're pretty much formed. You know, our bodies are formed. But young children who don't get milk, cow's milk, their brain tissues, their brain cells will not get the opportunity to develop properly. And even this has been noted by the scientific community. My daughter was 2.5 years old when we first came to India, and we were so poor we didn't eat very well. So milk was not part of our diet. And my daughter wasn't drinking milk, and she got rickets, like a bone thing, for lack. So I just hope that, you know, as adults, we can make our decisions, informed decisions, but I hope they're not inflicted upon our children to their detriment. Kirtan, it's an ISKCON hallmark. And Srila Prabhupada introduced us to sweet, melodious, deeply penetrating kirtans where the instruments accompanied the kirtan without overtaking it. The attention was on the mantra. It was Prabhupada's instruction, you know, the hearing, you know. So we could go for hours, and we often did. Nothing flashy, no hijinks, no, you know, acrobatics, no grandiose superstars. Just this very sweet hearing and chanting. When we did the Radhakrishna Temple album, we had 2.5 minutes allotted for the kirtan. So we practiced following Prabhupada's lead, how he would have kirtan at a very stable pace, just to hear, just to chant. And then toward the end, he would like speed it up a little bit quickly and then crescendo and stop. And if you listen to that kirtan, when we started out with, well, George's bass was there, but just our hands, these instruments were used. And then came the kartal, then the mridanga, you know, followed gently, not overtaking anything, and then stopped. And this we learned from Srila Prabhupada. So another, missed here, sorry. Yes. So I call, you know, it's like a kirtan drift. So I'm not using, there are plenty of ISKCON examples that I could have used, showing half-dressed people doing acrobatic flips in the air with, you know, but I didn't want to do that because they're all very well known. So this is like a neutral thing. Here's, but it gets the point across. Kirtans are for the pleasure of Krishna. So here is Kirtan Aid, the chant that changed lives. So one would hope that chanting Hare Krishna would change lives, but actually they want to build a home for orphans in Rishikesh. So especially as we increase our association with the wonderful members of the yoga community, sometimes we become a little bit swayed by or infected by their considerations. But we should try to keep in mind the considerations of our Vaishnava principles. So in the Brihadaranyaka Purana, it's explained that among all spiritual practices, Sankirtan is the best and foremost means of attaining the grace of the Supreme Lord Krishna. And it says it will be true Hari Sankirtan when we join the Sankirtan of pure devotees who are serving Sri Bhagavan according to the principles established in the Vedas and allied Shastras. So this is a statement from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. And then he said, contrastingly, it is not Harinam Sankirtan when it is conducted for the prevention of epidemics or cholera or pox or for prosperity and trade, for grain or for gain or respect and fame. In other words, the kirtan of the holy name of Krishna is there for the pleasure of Krishna. Chanting names not associated with Krishna has become a little common, or purposely, intentionally chanting with Mayavadis, even having Mayavadis lead a kirtan at our ISKCON programs, or having persons who are actually inimical to Krishna lead a kirtan because they happen to have a good voice. You know, so things we should just take note of. You know, another aspect that is going on, like a little drift, is not taking initiation. I kind of added, even after hearing so many instructions on the matter. So Srila Prabhupada wrote that one should always remember that a person who is reluctant to accept a spiritual master and be initiated is sure to be baffled in his endeavor to go back to Godhead. One who is not properly initiated may be presented as a great devotee, but in fact, he is sure to encounter many stumbling blocks on his path of progress towards spiritual realization, with the result that he must continue his term of material existence without relief. Such a helpless person is compared to a ship without a rudder, for such a ship can never reach its destination. So this is Adi Lila 135 from the purport. So this is another thing that goes on. Bhakti has become a buzzword. It's not just our word. It's a buzzword out there. Like in California, they have the Bhakti Fest, which has nothing to do with us. It's most of the headliners are totally impersonalist, Mayavadis. I mean, they're friends of Krishna, and some of our devotees go and chant there, but again, I won't name names, but they chant Hare Krishna, they have nice voices, but they have no connection with Krishna. In fact, one of the big chanters, he scoffs at, he goes, I don't know who Krishna is, I don't care who he is, I just like to chant. That is really not a good consciousness for us to imbibe. Lord Chaitanya would cover his ears when he would hear the Mayavadis speaking, you know. But we're like, hey, come on and join us, you know. Give them a microphone, so need to be careful. For us, bhakti is reserved for Krishna and no one else. Nowadays, people don't even want to say, I mean, I'm talking, when I'm saying people, actually I'm talking about devotees. Just go on Facebook and I guarantee you, you'll see two or three devotees sending love and light without mentioning Hare Krishna. Because they don't want to mention Hare Krishna because they don't want to offend anybody who might not believe in Krishna. So that's it. I mean, I've asked about that, and that's the explanation I'm giving. But so instead of saying Hare Krishna, love and light, forgetting who is the source of that love and light, you know, that is, of course, Sri Krishna. I got an invitation a couple of weeks ago from an ISKCON sannyasi who is going to be doing a program in America. And I was invited to attend the program where the Divine One or the Divine Couple, you know, for Sadhu Sangha, soulful kirtans, and deepen your inner connection with the Divine Couple. Prabhupada wasn't named, ISKCON wasn't named, and neither was Krishna's name mentioned on the whole thing. You know, so, I mean, I just kind of wonder, like, where is that taking us? And I'm going to read a letter from Srila Prabhupada that kind of addresses this impersonalism. The person, he's a godbrother. He's left his body. His name was Vana from New Vrindavan. And before coming to ISKCON, he was a published poet. So, you know, it's not that he was puffed up. Actually, he was quite a fairly humble guy. But he got encouraged to write a book of poetry on behalf of Krishna, because now he's a devotee, right? So he did that. The book was sent to Srila Prabhupada. And here's Prabhupada's answer. I have read the Shantamani poetry book. It's indirect, impersonal, and useless. Who will read these things? Krishna's name is only mentioned in two poems in the whole book. What is this? There are so many poems written by great acharyas. Why do you try to concoct something like this? It's not in our line. It is a waste of time, paper, money, ink, and labor. There is so much work to do for spreading this Krishna consciousness. Who will become attracted by such things? You should spend more time reading my books very carefully and stop all the unnecessary manufacturing. Then he said, but if you want to, he went on, you know, so he gave him a bit of a blow. But then he gave him a way out. He goes, if you want to write, study Krishna book, and from Krishna book, you can poetize, make into poems. But, you know, love and light, Srila Prabhupada was not a love and light guru, that's all I can say. He was really clear about Krishna consciousness. You know. So another symptom of the times, relaxed sexual behavior, and by that we can, you know, living together without marriage. And I'm talking about devotee community. Of course, this is going on everywhere. But yeah, in the devotee community. And you in Indian bodies who think, oh, I must be talking about the West. No, I'm talking about everywhere. Everywhere. Right here in Bharatvasa and all over the world. And devotees living together without marriage. Birth control within and without marriage. Abortion in ISKCON, including in India. Multiple marriages, meaning multiple divorces, unrestricted intermingling between genders, you know, hugging loose or casual talks, Facebook interactions, you know, beyond the basic what's necessary, texting, sexting, flirting, touching, etc., you know. So this kind of, you know, it's adrift. And, of course, there is confusion because ISKCON members are not immune to gender identity crises. Back in the day, 1967, one young man came up to Srila Prabhupada's quarters and he told Srila Prabhupada he didn't know what to do, whether he should be male or female. And Prabhupada told him, it doesn't matter, just choose one and stick with it. Another big one that I find just coming up is changing the appearance of deities. And this is a particularly gross example that won't identify where it is, but I mean, I think you can see that the eyes have been like dug out and overlapped and just, you know, I had another one, but I don't know how to make things stick. So another thing you'll see is I call it the Rasika rocks. I'll take Sheila's and paint them up. There's one that's down the road here. I won't say where, but it's down the road in one of our sacred institutions. And, you know, painted blue with some all kinds of glitter stuff, and Krishna's eyes are way over there, and Radha's eyes are way over there, and they're just, you know, and it's like the Rasika rocks, you know, where is this? Where have you ever been, you know, shown that example by Srila Prabhupada? You haven't. And then you're taking installed deities and suddenly changing, you know, it's the Russian influence, because the Russian devotees are incredibly artistic. But sometimes they get a little too artistic when it comes to the deities. So they'll take an installed deities, and I'm not speaking theoretically, I can give many examples on this one, and they change the color and the shape of the eyes, totally, of installed deities. You know, that is kind of tantamount, like you have a baby, and then you look at your new baby and you say, doctor, take him to the plastic surgeon, I want the eyes altered and, you know, bigger cheekbones, and, you know, change the nose and change the color, by the way. You know, you just, when deities are installed, that's it. That's how Krishna's appeared to you. That's what the installation does. Here's Krishna, I'm here, please serve me. You know, you can serve him. He's not a artistic expression, you know. I had lunch with somebody yesterday, and I know this person has deities. I said, where are your deities? Oh, they're getting painted. So I thought, okay. Like what? And then she tell, oh, well, the eyes are going to be gold. And I'm having the, you know, they're metal deities. I'm having the bodies painted yellow. You know? They're not even new deities. These are deities that have been worshipped for some time. So devotees aren't even aware of how strict Srila Prabhupada was when it came to maintaining the appearance of installed deities. And I don't have kind of time to go in on that, but I was there for occasions when that was an issue. Another thing we're seeing now, worshiping demigods and non-Vaishnavs. Not that the devotee themselves will worship the non-Vaishnav, but, okay, they join, and the non-Vaishnav is on their altar, and they just kind of leave him there. You know, and so I was asking some of the mentors of these persons, like, why are these people still on the altar? They're not even Vaishnavas. And he goes, well, you know, I mean, initially you understand that. You know, you don't, like, right away, like, wipe them up. But after a while, especially after you're initiated, you should know what's what, you know. So, yeah, worshiping Shiva. It's one thing to honor a demigod, and Prabhupada taught us by example how you do that. I was with him here in Vraj when he was taking us a few places, and suddenly there's a Shiva temple, and he paused before going in. He says, just do what I do. So he went in, and the first thing he did, he made obeisances with his right side, which is actually, we didn't know it at the time, but that was from Hari Bhakti Vilas. It's what you do. And then he kept his hands folded. So when they started to offer the prasadam, he just kept his hands folded and nodded his head, but he didn't take the prasadam. And he didn't tell us that we don't take the prasadam of demigods. He said, however, we can honor them by offering them the Mahaprasad of Krishna. You know. And this other fellow, he was big back in the day, I heard he's left his body now, but anyway, he was like really famous for producing ashes and gold chains. He would like, and the ashes would come, and these gold chains, and all these people were like, wow, he's God. You know, it's like a total nonsense. And just because a few ashes that he could hide up the sleeve of his, you know, costume, and hide a gold chain. I mean, any kid learns a couple magic tricks can do that themselves, you know. But one time, one of our devotees in Bombay went to see this person, and he challenged him that, you know, you're not God. And his followers are like, kind of upset, and then he goes, you know, he kind of a challenge, okay, show us something besides, and he goes, you know, what are you doing? You have a toothache. And go to the dentist? Well, then you must not be God, because God, he wouldn't need to go to the dentist, you know. And then he goes, I kick you in my face with my boot. And he walked out. He didn't do it, but he said that. And then he came back to where we were with Prabhupada, and he was telling the story to Prabhupada. And when he came to that part, I kick you in the face with my boot, Prabhupada laughed, you know. He likes us to be bold in our preaching. And he didn't tolerate himself when people started speaking nonsense about Krishna. He just, you know, he didn't accept it. Like, we didn't accept nonsense being spoken about Srila Prabhupada. So another symptom, not reading or studying Srila Prabhupada's books. So included in this is not listening to recorded lectures, conversations, morning walks. I mean, these conversations, the morning walks, the lectures, are just filled with great treasures of knowledge on how to apply Krishna consciousness, especially the morning walks. You know, there he is with, usually it's the leaders, and they're just, you know, presenting all types of situations, and Prabhupada's answering them. He's chastising them sometimes. You know, one person was saying, it's so, you know, it's so hard. You know, it's so hard to go out and preach and give these books to people. They don't want it. And right away, Prabhupada said, oh, so you think that people are just going to line up and agree with you? He said, you think they're going to agree with you, whatever you say? Therefore, you must preach. You must preach effectively in order to convince them, to defeat them. You know. So also the memory of Prabhupada videos, wonderful. Gaudabara's following Srila Prabhupada. There's all the wonderful books that are out there now by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. And I will say that when we went with Srila Prabhupada for the first time to the Gaudiya Math in Mayapur, Yoga Pit. First thing Prabhupada wanted to do was look at the books. Were there any books? So the only books were there were a few books by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and not even so many. And no books by any of the God brothers. And he says, just see. Just see, they're not preaching. And he expressed, he wanted us to write. He wanted the disciples to write and share their realizations. So we can glorify Srila Prabhupada by hearing about him, and all these wonderful media, they contain incredible instructions and information on the application of Krishna consciousness, as well as that reflections and insights on the spotless character and personality of Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said, all the devotees connected with the Krishna consciousness movement must read all the translated books. Otherwise, at some time, they will simply eat, sleep, and fall down from their position. Thus, they will miss the opportunity to attain an eternal, blissful life of transcendental pleasure. This is in a purport from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And one of my favorites, Srila Prabhupada, even I read my own books. So there was a small darshan, two devotees were there. One was TKG, Tamal Krishna Goswami. I think the other was Buddhimata, but I'm not like 100% memory sure. But Prabhupada, he asked, can you quote a verse? He was talking, he said, can you quote this verse? And each one was looking at the other one and not saying anything, because each one thought, well, he's going to say it, and that one was saying, well, that one's going to say it. And then Srila Prabhupada could detect, just see, you're not reading my books. You have to read my books and you have to study and learn my books, just like a lawyer. He studies the law books, chapter and verse. And that way he can defeat the opponents, you know. So how will you teach these other men unless you know my books? And then he said, do you know that every day I read my own books? And there was kind of a pause. And then he asked, do you know why I read my books? So at that point you can imagine there was kind of a little suspense building up in their minds. And he said, I read my books because every day even I learn something new when I read them. Do you know why I learn something new when I read my books? He said, because these are not my books. I don't write these books. Every morning when I sit here to write my books, Krishna comes and dictates to me, and I simply write down what he says. I simply take dictation from Krishna, and I write these books. And therefore, when I read them, even I learn something. So, I mean, for me, when I first read that, I literally was feeling some kind of like chills in my body, because I was thinking, there's Krishna speaking to Arjuna. So Bhagavad Gita, right, you know? And there's Krishna speaking to Srila Prabhupada. We have these direct purports. I mean, how wonderful is that? You know. So chanting rounds, reading is not always easy, but not to leave people hanging, I wanted to introduce this. It's an app. If you have a smartphone, you can download this. Be a Sage, Page by Page. And this is from ISKCON Silicon Valley, whose fearless leader is Vaisheshika Prabhu. And they've developed this app, so all the books are there, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna books, Sri Supanishad, Nectar of Devotion. And you can determine your own pace. And it gives you a whole chart of how, if you want to read a book, you know, a particular book or a number of books in a year, how many pages you'll have to read a day. If you want to read in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, how many pages you'll have to read a day. And then if you want, you can set a little timer to go off and remind you, now it's time to read. Now it's time to be a sage, page by page. You know. And then the other... it's just, you know, gives you some hope. You can do this. So, chapter a day, Chad. So it's another innovation to help us improve or begin our reading habits. And it's a chapter a day cultivating the spirit of reading and studying Srila Prabhupada's books by yourself or in an online group. So you can look this up online, you know, and then if you want to do it by yourself, or if you want, they have groups. So in a letter to Upendra, January 6, 1969, when you study very carefully all of the literatures which are available, especially Bhagavad Gita as it is, you will have in your grasp answers to all questions that may be put to you. Please encourage the others to read this Bhagavad Gita at least one chapter every day. So that there's two parts to this. And this ends the first part. So I don't know, because the next part will probably take maybe about half an hour, so I don't know if you want to do that. I can just stop here, you know.
I think you can carry on.
And so, I mean, but I don't know, do they need the room, or?
No.
Is it okay? Should we take a vote? We can be democratic. Should take a vote.
Can we just put the fans on a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Carry on.
Yeah. If you can do them a little low, so they don't, like, you know. Or put them on for a few minutes just to, like, cool down if they get too much. So, okay, the second part of this I've named it Exclusive Devotion to Srila Prabhupada and His Teachings is Not Fanaticism. So sometimes persons will, you know, maybe you have to put them a little more. Is that enough? Or do you need a little more?
Just the back one. I don't think
you know? So one of them is whizzing around. But how about the ladies? Do you need a little fan over here? Okay, if we can get this one up, because we have some people about to faint, and it won't be in ecstasy. So, but sometimes we're
criticized. Maybe somebody can adjust that.
So sometimes persons criticize that ISKCON is too much focused on Srila Prabhupada. I know one, again, I'm not naming names, but there was one actually former guru who fell down, and among his criticisms were too much focus on Srila Prabhupada. So, you know, and they'll claim that we're narrow-minded or fanatical. That's the claim. So while we know and we honor all saintly persons, we're not discrediting that there's other saintly Vaishnavas, other spiritual teachers, other seekers of the truth. As members of ISKCON, we're bound heart and soul to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam as exemplified and taught to us by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. So I wanted to try to express something about that. So after the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were other acharyas that followed. They were carrying out the message, but gradually the Sampradaya fell into disarray, and they didn't even have internet to do it. Just like things started to deteriorate and fall apart. And then the Aprasampradayas appeared with concocted philosophical deviations and rituals. And then eventually the Vaishnavas became completely rejected and ignored by respectable society, and the message of Mahaprabhu was lost. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared in the 1800s, and by divine guidance as a seeker, because he was a seeker of the truth, he came into contact with the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it completely transformed his life, and we can safely say as a result our lives have also been transformed.
Let's see if I can get a little light here.
So his mission, it became his mission to expose the bogus followers and restore the message of Mahaprabhu to its rightful purity and respect. And he was helped, assisted in this effort by his son, who became known, of course, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And together they would preach fearlessly, you know, defeating the impersonalist and instilling the glories of the Sankirtan movement far and wide throughout India. And then in 1896, the small book that was written by Srila Bhakti Vinod, The Life and Precepts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, made its way outside of the confines of India, to Montreal, to London, in the UK. So that kind of was a hint of what was to come, because for the first time there was an exposure outside of India. And it was into this mood that our Srila Prabhupada entered, becoming the initiated disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And in doing so, you know, he became not just another name or another picture in the line of disciplic succession. He accomplished something that no other previous acharya had ever done. And that was that he actually took the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and he took the Sankirtan movement all around the world, outside of India, all around the world. So, and he did that in total dedication to the order of his guru. And by doing so, he fulfilled a mandate by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who said that his name would be spread all over the world. And no one else can make claim to this. It's like one of those bars that can't be broken. I don't know if it's still going on, but you know, they're having these Olympics. So the whole idea in the Olympics is, you know, you want to defeat the previous, you know, winner. You break the record. That's break the record. So Prabhupada set a record that can't be broken. It's like, it's done. And in the Antya Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's explained that the fundamental religious system in the age of Kali is the Sankirtan movement. And no one can successfully preach the Sankirtan movement without being empowered by the Supreme Lord. And that empowerment is called, that empowered personality is called Shaktavesh Avatar. And persons outside of ISKCON have widely accepted Srila Prabhupada as being an empowered personality, a Shaktavesh Avatar. So the an acharya is one who teaches by example. You know, Srila Prabhupada taught by his example. And when asked about his success, he would very modestly reply, "If I have done anything." It was like, you know, if I have done anything, like here we are sitting in the result of his success. But if I have done anything, it is that I've always followed the teachings of my spiritual master. I have not deviated. It is by his mercy only that there is any success. So he deflected any recognition of himself to the lotus feet of his spiritual master. He was 100% loyal to his spiritual master. And this same mood is expressed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 7th canto, 9th chapter, 28, by Prahlad Maharaj, who was speaking to his spiritual master, Sri Narada Muni, instructed by his spiritual master, Sri Narada Muni. But he's speaking to the Supreme Lord. "My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead." Oops, I actually had some. So Prabhupada got initiated. So he's speaking, "Oh, my dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, due to association with material desires, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes. But your servant, Narada Muni, kindly took me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve transcendence. Therefore, it is my first duty to serve him. How could I ever leave his service?" So that is a very deep instruction. We have seen over time in ISKCON that some persons, they leave Prabhupada's service, they think they've maybe found something deeper, you know. An example was given to us in 1967 in July in San Francisco that has kind of been my guiding light throughout my years. And I'm sure for others who were there at that time. Because Srila Prabhupada had become very ill. And although there was great effort to assist him in recovery, the recovery wasn't going on. So he finally decided that he would go back home. His own words, "I'll go back home to India, to Vrindavan." He called Vrindavan his home. "And if I can recuperate, then I'll come back." And so he said, "I want you boys and girls to push on this movement." And it was extremely shocking. And he goes, I'm an old man. I may die at any time. So I want you boys and girls to push on this movement. You know, certainly we'd heard that mantra, birth, death, disease, and old age from, you know, we knew the mantra, but it was something not yet too close to our lives, you know. The oldest person at that point was just barely 30 years old, and nobody had suffered a terrible disease yet, and we just didn't see Srila Prabhupada as an old man, you know. So suddenly the thought of his absence hit us, and it kind of gave us a perspective as to our own position at that time, which was that we were really quite immature. We were kind of bold in his presence, because he told us, go out and preach. And I mean, when he said that was at my initiation, I raised my hand, well, how do we do that? What do we say? And he said, you listen to me, whatever I tell you, whatever I speak, and then you repeat. Don't add or subtract. And so we kind of boldly would do that, and if anybody challenged us, we always had Swamiji to go back and ask. Even if he was in New York or somewhere else, we could write him a letter and he'd answer us. So we felt very emboldened. But now he's saying, you know, I might not come back and I want you to push on this movement. And that was quite a shock. And we were thinking maybe we're going to need some help, and we knew that he'd asked some of his godbrothers to come and help him preach, although none of them ever came. But now maybe they would come. So he was asked by one godbrother if perhaps in his absence could we ask someone to come and help us. And when Prabhupada heard the question, he became very, very still, very silent and very grave. He was just sitting with his back very erect. And it was like this all-engulfing silence. And practically we stopped breathing. And it was like, you know, one of those, a moment is 12 years or more. The other day in class, somebody quantified this a moment in so many yugas. But anyway, at that point, it seemed to us like a moment is 12 years or more. And when Srila Prabhupada spoke, it was in a very deep voice. And the first words he said was, my spiritual master was not an ordinary man. He saved me. And then he went on to tell us that even if one person comes and changes one word of what I have taught you, the whole thing will be spoiled. So I want you boys and girls to push on this movement. I mean, for some of us, including myself, it was the first time kind of like we have a movement. I mean, we were just feeling it was us and Swamiji. We weren't, not everybody catching on that here was a movement and we were part of it. So he was passing on, even then, the future of the Hare Krishna movement to some preschoolers. And he was protecting us, even though he was protecting us and protecting ISKCON, even though we couldn't understand it at the time. Later on we could understand that when his godbrothers had refused to come, and then they started criticizing, oh, Swami Maharaj is going to America and he's associating with the Malechas. You know, critical. So now, if they were to come, it wouldn't be with an intention of helping us. It would be for an intention of taking control. So he had to speak like he did. If anybody came and changed any one word, the whole thing would be spoiled. So he was protecting us. He was protecting ISKCON from outside influence. He protected us and he protected ISKCON from influences, and he inspired us. He inspired faith in him. He taught us by his own example of faithfulness and purity. And he built faith through strong lectures. His honesty, his transparency, his loving care and guidance. So faith inspires gratitude and an obligation. So someone gives you something valuable, you know, like Prabhupada was giving us spiritual knowledge, so it inspired our faith. But there's an obligation that incurs, and that's experienced through service. When we accept something from our guru, then we're obliged to reciprocate. And that reciprocation is actually the real meaning of guru dakshin. Like when people are initiated, sometimes they're thinking, you know, they go out to people, you know, give me dakshin, and they're expecting some money. It's a form of dakshin, but the real dakshin is to follow the orders, follow the instructions of the spiritual master. That is the higher form. So, what does Srila Prabhupada want? He wanted us to love Krishna, that we become lovers of Krishna. And to attain that love, we must follow his instructions, not someone else's. And in following his instructions as they were given is not sentimental. It's not fanatical. It's essential. Satisfaction of the guru is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Prabhupada would say, I'm not a great devotee. My only qualification is my 100% faith in my spiritual master. So this loyalty was Srila Prabhupada's source of power to pioneer and spread the Sankirtan movement. And to be effective, his followers, that means all of us, must develop our own faith and teachings and bolster. We must teach and bolster faith in Srila Prabhupada by representing him effectively. So it is our good fortune to be counted among his disciples, his grand disciples and followers into the future. And it's our duty to represent his teachings and legacy so that we may proudly cherish the future of ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has inaugurated the Hare Krishna movement, which is non-different from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one associates with this movement, he directly associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we had our 50th celebration a couple of years ago, and some of you here in this room, the younger ones, folks, you may be around for the 100th Jubilee, the Golden Jubilee of ISKCON. So I just please remain loyal followers of Srila Prabhupada and his ISKCON mission, and as Prabhupada would say, take the credit for doing so. Srila Prabhupada will undoubtedly empower anyone who takes to Krishna consciousness with sincerity, with faith and determination. He will empower you with the ability to further the mission by carrying out his instructions and orders. Hare Krishna. So that ends this little presentation. I don't know if anybody would like to comment or Kavi Chandraswami, maybe you could say something. You're a very senior person here.
Yeah, you talked about
Sadhana. You want to give him the microphone? Yeah, I could have done a whole class on that one.
Quality of I wasn't there that early on, but it was very, very strong. No grains cooked by karma. Everybody knew that. Now, you tell someone, no, this one's all right, there's no eggs. That's the kind of stuff, you know, that's going on.
Well, not
and
only
I think
that.
It's because there's no ashram life for most of the devotees.
Yeah, loss of ashram. That was actually one of the hits, also. You know, when I was mentioning that I asked for suggestions, that was also one of the top hits, the loss of ashram. You know, we don't We don't find the ashrams, right?
They don't hear these things. They don't even hear about it. Many, many things.
Yeah, we would have... I remember when we first made the Hare Krishna temple album with George. So we were like being sent, all the non-devotee people thought that we were a rock group. You know, they didn't understand that actually we were the Radha Krishna temple, that was our life. And we were being sent here and there, and sometimes, you know, it'd be like an overnight trip or something, and we'd try to make prasadam enough to last. But it wasn't, didn't always work so well. I remember the first time we got sent away, it was to France on a train, and we had these, we actually brought the pots. I mean, the pots of dal, pots of rice, pots of sabji with us on the train. And I remember one of the devotees didn't want us to eat until a certain time, which was when Radha Landaneshwara would be eating. We were like, I mean, that was nice sentiment, but by the time that time came around, all the prasadam was spoiled. And we just like, and it, we were starving, but we, there was no question of like going and eating something else, you know, like, and it was a Sunday, so it was, in those days things were closed. I don't know if any of you know Yaman Yama Das Brahmachari, you know, Yaman Yama Das Brahmachari is an alter ego of a Kendra Das, and he's really a great comedian. So he has this alter ego, Yaman Niyama Das Brahmachari. And then sometimes he'll make up, has these songs or these sketches, and one of them includes the term filthy, dirty, carmy grains. So it's become kind of like, oh yeah, you know, if you go out, then you're gonna eat some filthy, dirty, carmy grains. I mean, you know, sometimes you're traveling, you're going to be obliged to eat something, either, you know, like, I call it fuel food. You know, it's not really prasadam, but hey, the body needs something, you know. I drove to California recently, and we were trying to, like, from West Virginia, was going with a god sister, and we were trying to make sure we hit temples along the way, but it didn't, you know, sometimes it didn't happen. And, you know, somehow we did pretty good, though. But, you know, sometimes you have to eat something. It's not for sense gratification, it's just like keep the body going, like you put gas in the car. So I call it fuel food. But the idea, I mean, you'll see it on Facebook. Oh, I just found the greatest vegan restaurant. Like, that suddenly makes it okay, you know? Like, you can go there and eat because it's a vegan restaurant. As Prabhupada said, you know, food that's not offered to Krishna, and how can you offer this stuff? Because, you know, it may be vegan, but usually they're using onions and garlic and other unofferable items, which therefore you can't offer, you know. So it's just, again, nothing was intended as, you know, here's a total, this is just a few things, a few items, and meant to maybe pique your interest and see what you could do personally to help uplift the standards, you know, keep the standards up. First, to do that, you have to know them. And as things are moving down the line, you know, they're kind of drifting. You know, in Didi kitchens, you'll find things like canned goods, frozen goods. Prabhupada, about frozen, he goes, nasty. Now, we may use it in our mass production of food distribution, but for the deities, no, there's a different standard, you know. But that's become, you know, a blurred situation.
Yeah, I was at one temple in America, and, you know, the devotees were just finishing prasad from the noon. So I took a little bit of one soup, and then the temple president, "What are you eating?" "Don't eat that, it's too much oil. I'll take you to the restaurant and get myself a kid's restaurant. We'll get something much better."
Was it like a devotee restaurant?
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. But, you know, yeah. Higher kind of.
Yeah, well. And,
but, you know, the thing is, it's better than the, you know, the Rajabhoga offering. And they only use ghee for the ghee lamps.
Well, that's good, because some places don't even do that.
And he said, you know, well, all the ghee is contaminated anyway. Because he has Bengali cooks, and, you know, they just put pull the wok with oil and then can't control.
Yeah.
Can't afford that much ghee. Nobody can afford that.
You, if you start, if you determine, I know one of, like in my zone, there's only one temple that I'm still having a fight with about that. But other, the other ones that we just we're going to do it the way we were taught. It's ghee, and we're going to cook in ghee. And as soon as that decision was made and we started doing it, it was just like there was no problem. Devotees make once a week, they make a big pile of ghee, and people are bringing piles of, you know, there is no problem. But as long as you don't make that determination, it's not going to happen. And where you can, like in New Vrindavan, they have, you know, a goshala. And so they even have a devotee who's making, you know, the deities are getting ghee from the cows and, you know, all dairy from those cows. So if there's, you know, if you're feeling about that, because it is horrible, you know, the commercial dairy is horrible, and we should want to do something about it. But if you're in a city, keeping a cow isn't probably too practical. And cows are pretty expensive hobbies. So, you know, we haven't got that part totally figured out. But in the meantime, as Prabhupada told us way back in 67, when we found out there was vitamin E oil from fish in the milk, Prabhupada was told, and like he goes, it was just like with great sadness, he said, but what can we do? Krishna wants his milk. You know. So the overriding moment, the Arjuna moment, Krishna wants his milk. Now it's up to us to figure out how to get the best milk we can. You know. And if we can't get the best available, meaning from a, you know, devotee source, then Krishna wants his milk. Oh. Yeah.
I liked your point about stressing through the Prabhupada's books. A couple of visits ago.
Can you give her the mic? It's funny how they get the mic over for the men, and then, you know, here's the ladies over here. No, but it's a point of etiquette, you know? It's like at the Bhagavatam class, ladies chant the verse, and most of the men, you're lucky to get one, you know, so one lady, that lady with that huge loud voice will chant, and then suddenly that's it. Or maybe they'll have two, and that's it, although like 10 men have just chanted, you know, ladies. Well, it's not the town, it's the, it's per, you know, the boys in orange.
I really liked your point about stressing through the Prabhupada's books. In a past trip to Russia, we were taking prasadam there, and one girl came up and she says, "Can I talk to you?" I said, "Well, certainly." She had Prabhupada's Gita in her hand. And she said, "Well, you know, my mentors, they told me that because I'm a lady, I should have three mantras. One for Krishna, Hare Krishna mantra, one for Saraswati, and one for Lakshmi." She said, "But I'm kind of bewildered because Srila Prabhupada doesn't seem to say this in her books." And she starts reading something. And, you know, we just confirmed that, you know, what was in Srila Prabhupada's books was righteous. I knew that. So I was thinking, you know, you can't have control over everybody who preaches because there's so many people there and people are going to preach what they're going to preach. But Srila Prabhupada's books was so overwhelmingly strong to her that she could understand what was right.
I had a same experience today in the temple room. A person, and I said, "Are you reading the books?" And she goes, "Yes." I said, "Then you know the answer." And she said, "Yes, you're right." You know? Yeah.
And I see that Srila Prabhupada was so expert that he could ascertain the true essence of all the myriad of scriptures we have out there. You know, like he knows right away what's karmakanda, what's, you know, off the wall Vedic and what's Vaishnava. And the Vaishnava conclusions are in Srila Prabhupada's books. So we have to be careful when we take from other sources because sometimes those people aren't so expert in what is the Vaishnava conclusion of the Vedas. And so we see that this subtle karmakanda things are coming in.
And not so subtle.
All these other dimensions. You know, Prabhupada just smashed those things. And if you read Prabhupada's books, you'll come to understand what is the truth.
Yeah, I didn't get into this, but one of the other things that I noticed is please nobody take offense if you're in an Indian body, but it's coming into the temples now, because all around the world, naturally, people are attracted to our beautiful temples and our beautiful deities. And, you know, people from India are all around the world now, and so they come to our temples, but there's this, what I call the happy Hindu influence coming along with the people coming in. And we got that 1967 right away. Prabhupada straightened us out on that one. Some Indian man came to the temple, and we thought, you know, oh, he's from India, he must know everything, you know. We didn't know. And it was Rocky. So most of the Indians know Rocky. We put some string around your wrist, and you become a brother or a sister, you know. So then Prabhupada wasn't there, and he found out about it. And he writes a letter to Mukunda Maharaj, which you can look up. It's in the Veda base, you know. So what is this? Who has told Rocky? Who's told you to do that? It has nothing to do with Vaishnavism. It has nothing to do with Krishna. It's just a social custom. Who's told you to do that? So, pooh, we got that one really straight, real fast. And now there's just, I see people walking around with, like, you know, some dirty string on their wrist, you know. Rocky?
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm just saying that we were straightened out by Prabhupada. And I mean, whether people are going to pay attention or not, at least I think it's good to know how it was given to us. And then whether you follow it or not, you know, is another thing. At least we should know. Yeah. What can we? The
Sudama 72.
Yeah, it's in May of 74. So you can just look it up, you'll find it. It's May of 74. Well, there's one person and then you. Anyways, I mean, not all changes are bad. Some of them are good. Thank God we've changed in some cases, you know. I mean, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used to use this example. Just because Pico went naked as a child doesn't mean he should go naked as an adult. So, I mean, somewhere down the line there were things, you know, we were very immature. And, you know, to some extent we've grown, thank God. Other changes, you know, or time, place, circumstance, but others are more like I call the mission drift, you know, moving away from the core. You know, introduction of demigod worship. I have been in ISKCON temples where there is Shiva on the altar. I mean, I'm telling you, Prabhupada did not introduce that at all, you know. So, just, you know, as a graphic example, there's others. So it's up to each individual to know what was taught and to make your determination and commitment. How are you going to serve Srila Prabhupada, you know? But the closer you keep to what he's given us, the stronger ISKCON will remain. You know, that's my simple point. This gentleman, he wanted to say hello.
Yeah, we have seen in some of the temples in North America, they try to celebrate Holi.
To what?
Holi Festival.
Holi, yeah.
What's Prabhupada's view on that? They say that they can attract.
Yeah, well, just like Prabhupada said, they may be attracted and they may come, but they won't stay because they came for something else. So, you know, I mean, people come, they do it. Actually, now they're not going to do it this year. They were doing it the past few years in New Vrindavan. And, I mean, it's true, a lot of people came. Unless you have a strong preaching effort to go along with it, though, it just looks like some, you know, crazy thing to do. We tried it up in Detroit, and actually, because there is a strong preaching effort, we've actually gotten people, Western people, that have, you know, taken up. But if you're just simply going to be Hari bowling and throwing a bunch of colors, and it's not really going to convince anybody about Krishna consciousness. Therefore, if you're going to do something, there has to be strong upfront preaching. You know, that's the bottom line.
Another question is that, you know, like in certain areas, you know, like
in the microphone, yeah,
Rath Yatra time, like we, like, you know, some temples, you know, like to invite, you know, different yoga groups to have, you know, like the booths, and especially in Montreal, we are thinking.
In Montreal, Toronto, they have what's called Yoga Meltdown. It's very successful. These people come, they're not on the main stage, they have an area. But they're hearing the kirtans, they're attending the kirtans, they're getting Krishna prasadam, and they're not preaching anything, so that's good. I mean, you know, they're not, you know, they're just doing their acrobats. But they're not given, you know, they're given a space, so it brings people in. But our preaching is straightforward.
And it's totally controlled by us.
Yeah.
No,
if you look, that there's a very, he actually told how to do it. They asked in Bombay, I don't have the references now, but it's a conversation. You can Google Gopal Krishna Srila Prabhupada Juhu inviting yoga people. You know, he was saying how it could be done. But it wasn't inside the temple, and it was based on Bhagavad Gita. You know, so, you know. Like the road show was, I wasn't there for that, so it was, you know, quite flashy and quite attractive, but there was no connection being made. That was the problem there, you know. So then, you know, they would come for something, but then they would lose interest because they weren't coming for the real purpose. Okay? Yes?
Some temples, this herbal tea and herbal coffee they produce, and it is taken also. Herbal tea and herbal coffee.
The what?
Herbal tea and herbal coffee.
Yeah, well, I mean, as long as it's herbal. You know what Prabhupada said here about in Vrindavan? This is very interesting. So people wanted to, you know, I mean, people come, they want coffee, tea all the time. We get that, you know. He said, okay, well, you can build outside, on the outside of the not outside in the street, outside the temple along this, you know, the wall there, and have a little kitchen. So if they want coffee or tea, they can go make it for themselves. So he was giving that allowance, just like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta was rolling beaties for the workers so they wouldn't waste time and get the temple built, you know. But we won't, you know, he also told devotees, I'm getting two answers on this. One set says that he said no, and another one said, maybe he said yes. But regarding decaffeinated, I mean, to me, I took a vow not to drink coffee or tea, so I don't take it, caffeinated, decaffeinated. But it's another thing, like, that infiltrates. And then there's another thing, it's called near beer that they have in America. So it's near beer, so I mean, I'll quote Kirtan Ananda on this one because actually it's pretty good. He goes, near beer, next beer. In other words, you start out, then you'll graduate.
What about the veggie meat?
Some
temples, they actually, you know, they devotees or
anyway, I think they have to kind of.
Main thing they serve.
You know, depending on your audience, I guess. I mean, for myself, I
no,
gave.
No, I mean, for devotees.
Did the devotees make it?
I guess.
The devotees say, oh, it tastes just like chicken.
Yeah, I just, like, I gave up. Like, I gave up these things, and I've lost any taste for these things. So I don't know why anybody would want to eat something that tastes like a dead animal, even if it's not a dead animal. You know. But at the same time, you know, somebody is like in your preaching and you have your whatever you have and it's, you know, pulsed and, you know, made into prasadam. I mean, one really successful restaurant, you've maybe been there to the one, Govinda's in Philadelphia, and they have this, like, these Philly cheesesteaks. Oh my God, they're really good, you know. But I don't even think they taste like, I mean, to me it's not a meat item, but it definitely brings in people, you know. But as far as in our temple and in our private lives, we, you know, we should try to protect ourselves and protect what little bhakti we have and try to, you know, fan the little sparks that are within our hearts and the hearts of others, and, you know, realizing what I do is going to impact others. So we should try to, you know, try to be careful. And if we feel we're not advancing quick enough, then, you know, we should look at our habits, how we're chanting. One reason for not chanting good rounds was given by one Babaji to an Iskandan person. But he said that the person was expressing to this person he had trouble chanting, and he asked him, well, do you ever eat, you know, grains cooked by non-devotees? And the person said, well, yeah, he travels a lot. And he goes, that's your reason. You know, we get him fed. Well, why? Because when the cook is cooking and they're like, you know, so you're eating the energy of a unknown person, you know. And besides, nothing tastes as delicious as Krishna prasadam. I don't know, have any of you ever read The Prasadam Addict? This is like an underground book. It is so amazing. The person who wrote it is unfortunately not alive. You can find it, I think, online under Prasadam Addict, so part one. You just read that, and it's just like you're like laughing your heart out because the way he describes the whole process of prasadam and, you know, his whole introduction to prasadams. He goes, you know, I've been around enough to know when you see a bunch of people sitting around grinning like anything, I know what they're up to, you know, like after eat prasadam, you know. Anyway. That was the point.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying that, you know, some devotees, like you said, they don't come to Guru Puja, they don't have that respect. But I'm thinking the Guru, you know, stresses.
Anyway, if devotees are initiated and they don't have the respect to come to Srila Prabhupada's Guru Puja, I put the blame on their Guru for not properly instructing them. That's as far as I'll go. But that's truly where it's at, you know. One of the reasons ISKCON, in spite of many attacks and fall downs and all the rest, stays is because we stay together and we maintain our focus on Srila Prabhupada. And the successful gurus are successful because they're teaching their disciples how to honor and worship Srila Prabhupada. They're teaching Srila Prabhupada's teachings to their disciples. Okay, thank you very much for your patience. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. And I hope that nobody was offended personally.